Welcome back to your Valley Sports Plugs 2024 Valley Sports Year in Review. I'm your host, Chris Patrick, joined this evening by my co-hosts, Mr. Michael Benjamin and VSP Tallman. Welcome back, gentlemen. How are we doing?
Chris Tallman, what a year it's been. Lots of wins, probably a lot more losses, and lots of heartbreak from our Valley teams, but I'm ready to dive into it. Last possible stream of 2024. Tallman, how you doing, brother?
How's it going, fellas? I'm hanging in there. Let's say it's been going to Las Vegas before Christmas. Don't recommend it, but it's been a hell of a past couple of days for me. But I'm excited to be here with you guys, and it's crazy how fast this year has moved. It's unbelievable, but it's for me, it's been a year of heartbreak for Arizona sports. But we do have one bright spot, so looking forward to talking about that.
Yeah, you know, there's always got to be a diamond in the rough, you know, something that gives us that little glimmer of hope. And this season, I'm not going to, you know, bury the lead. It is ASU football. They win the Big 12 in their first season in the conference. But, man, what the hell else happened in 2024? I really had to think about it. You get all the way to December and you think about the road ahead. It's hard sometimes going back and reliving that pain. You know, thinking about it, we had the Arizona Cardinals finish their first season with head coach John Gannon, the half season of Kyler Murray. So disappointing season, but the expectations were basically non-existent. One of the biggest heartbreaks of the year, our Arizona Coyotes are forced to sell and move to Utah. The owner, Alex Murillo, still retains the rights for, I think, 2, 3, 4 years, something like that. But he is failing on all fronts to get a new situation, new development, stadium, same old problems. And honestly, since about April, May, I don't think anybody's heard anything on the matter. So that's kind of out there in limbo. The Phoenix Suns, they did make it to the playoffs only to be swept out in the first round. Very disappointing after acquiring Bradley Beal, who played maybe half the season, Kevin Durant banged up. Of course, we go into the summer and the Olympics happened. That was another bright spot for the country. USA basketball won another gold medal. Katie got what? Tallman, you said it was his fourth gold medal?
I think so, yeah. That was so long ago, Chris. Even though I said the year went by fast.
Yeah, right? Even the summer. That is funny. Like with hindsight, it's like when you're living in the moment, you're like, man, this is dragging. But then you get towards the end of the year, it's like, wow, that shit really did fly by. Like I didn't even have the Olympics in my notes, but I just remembered because we're talking about the Suns. And Devin Booker played more of a secondary defensive kind of role. And questions have been asked, you know, is he carrying some of that Team USA Olympic hangover into this new season as the Suns are struggling to start their 2024-2025 campaign? But before I get ahead of myself, as we kind of reminisce and look back at this high level, the Arizona Diamondbacks, after making it to the World Series, winning a game in the World Series, coming up short, missed the playoffs completely following that season. I mean, the Rangers also did, and they're the team that beat us in the World Series. I don't know if that's any consolation, but boy, oh boy, what an absolute disappointment. And on top of that all, the news broke this last week, a couple days ago. Our Gold Glove first baseman, Christian Walker, declined the qualifying offer, did not come to an agreement with the Diamondbacks, and will play for the Houston Astros on a 3-year, $60 million deal. So a lot to unpack there. I'll be curious and ready to talk about that. Did the D-backs not see value in extending him a 3-year contract? The qualifying offer was for around $22, $23 million, I think. So to have him get a contract where the yearly is less than that, I think is a little confusing for a lot of Diamondbacks fans. But then, alas, we get here to the end of the year. Your Arizona Cardinals are once again struggling now in your second season with Jonathan Gannon, Kyler Murray's sixth season. He's fully healthy, hasn't missed a game, but alas, we are eliminated from playoff contention. And as I said, we await the new year to see what ASU football does as they make their first appearance in the expanded college football playoffs. It's 12 teams. They got the bye in the first round, winning the Big 12. Whew, boys, that was a lot. So why don't we rewind it back? And Mike, you had made some graphics here for us, right? Or you want to just chat the shit?
No, Chris, that was perfect. And to sum up 12 months of Valley Sports just like that, I think you did an incredible job, but I got to roll it back to the big one of 2024, which was the Arizona Coyotes relocating to Utah and becoming the Utah Hockey Club, Yikes. I'm sure it'll be something like what Washington did when they were changing from the Redskins and then they were the football club and now they're the Commanders. But, you know, the last ditch effort for that land auction in North Phoenix was halted. It just seemed like there was never truly any buy-in from any party. It seemed like I was looking back kind of on the timeline on what happened with the Coyotes, and they had signed a 3-year agreement to go to Mullet in 2022. And that didn't seem like that far ago, right? So basically everything had kind of fallen apart. And the saddest part about it too was 5 days before the final game against Edmonton, the players and employees are told that it's basically written in the sand that this team is leaving Arizona after 28 years. But guys, I know we had plenty of time and chatter during our heat check sit downs, but I know it's still a fresh wound for a lot of us, but I'll pass it over to you guys. I mean, how does it feel now that the NHL season is going on? And like, are you guys paying attention to anything in hockey right now? Because I'm not. I'm still bent up out of shape with this, man.
Yeah, I'm not at all. I think a couple of times I went back to check just what the Utah Hockey Club's record was, and I don't think they're – that was a couple of weeks ago, so I don't think they're doing very well. But it's crazy to think that one of the largest cities in the country is not a four-major sport town, and it's just sad how – One bad owner can just botch something like this. But I don't know about you, Chris. You've been watching hockey, following your Penguins.
yeah, my Pittsburgh Penguins. No, guys, I don't keep up with hockey too much. Pulled up the standings. Utah Hockey Club is 16-12. They're above 500. They're currently ranked higher than the Nashville Predators and the Chicago Blackhawks. So for what that's worth. It did kind of tick me off. I'm surprised I didn't text you guys the other day. You probably got the same notification where it was Clayton Keller. Someone had 3 or 4 goals through 2 quarters and they were like, this is a franchise record. And it's like everything anybody does is going to be a franchise record. Like this is the first player to play 30 games in a Utah Hockey Club jersey. Like it's just the glazing. I don't think it's unique to Utah. I'm pretty sure when we got the Golden Knights expansion and they were getting the same treatment. They were a good team. I think they made the Stanley Cup in their first season, if I'm not mistaken. Don't know if we can really expect the same from Utah here. They didn't have an expansion draft, right? Cause they just inherited everything the Coyotes had.
That's correct.
They just kept the same roster, I believe.
Yeah. So that they're at a far more disadvantage than the Golden Knights were when they expanded. But no, guys, I'm not keeping up with hockey. It does bring a tear to my eye, you know, going around town, seeing those brave souls still wearing their Kachina jerseys, the couple license plates I've seen, the bumper stickers. It brings a tear to my eye. It's sad, man.
Well, dude, and the other thing too is, you know, I'm sitting over here at Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers right down the road from myself. And all of a sudden, the Utah Hockey Club game is up and it's the end of the second period and they're going to the halftime report with those, you know, announcers and that team that breaks down the club. And I think the saddest part, if you are a true fan of this team and was invested, you know, for 28 years, having to see that in the Valley, all those broadcasts basically put in front of you as a general reminder that Alex Morello and the Arizona Coyotes couldn't get off their ass fast enough, even with years in front of them, and get something done with Arizona. It's just, it's a travesty. You guys know how I feel. Good riddance is my favorite tagline when it comes down to the Arizona Coyotes, even though I do feel bad for all of those fans. It's always going to be a sour kind of taste in anybody's mouth, the way that they leave and the way that so many different promises seem to be unkept by, you know, the front office with them. But what a great start to 2024 if you really think about it, right? Because that was pretty early in the year, man.
Mike, I also have to add, I think for me, I also feel bad for the players because now they have to live in Utah for like at least half the year.
Oh, it's cold.
Yeah,
you can't really find alcohol anywhere. Yeah, it's a tough place, man.
But hey, I'm sure they, I'm sure plenty of them still reside here or elsewhere. But yeah, crazy way to start the new year. It is kind of wild how time does fly through a year, through a decade. Like, I didn't feel like they were playing at Mullet for very long, but what, it was two full seasons with no end in hope. And the commissioner is just like, nope, we're not doing that anymore. You guys, you have to sell. And I think for the league as a whole, I see where they're coming from. I don't blame them. I'm not mad at the NHL. And I don't think I've seen any sentiment where anybody is mad at the NHL. It's strictly Alex Murillo. And it's crazy because, if I'm not mistaken, he took over for another previously incompetent and degenerate owner. So it's like, there's just a trend in Arizona sports of having bad owners. We think the Suns might have solved that problem with Matt Ishbia, but I've seen a growing sentiment, people encouraging Michael Bidwell to sell the team. That's never going to happen. Ken Kendrick has been labeled cheap. People have called for Ken Kendrick to sell the team before. I don't think that's going to happen either. It's just, you know, you get what you get. But enough of the Coyotes. 2025, guys, I don't see us really talking about them. So rest in peace. Rest in peace, Arizona Coyotes.
We ain't going to talk about them at all, Chris. But we're going to talk plenty about the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm glad that you talked about Ken Kendrick and how people have still been kind of calling for his head. But if you guys really remember and think about it, this past season was the highest payroll, I believe, in team history at about $177 million. And it started right off the rip, technically in 2023, but I had to include it. Bringing in Eduardo Rodriguez from the Detroit Tigers, big left-handed arm, as well as what we thought in Jordan Montgomery was kind of the last hurrah going into spring training. And you think this is going to be an unstoppable starting five, pairing these two with up-and-coming Brandon Faught, your ace Zach Gallen, and Merrill Kelly. And obviously, what did we see? We saw the collapse, the cold streak in September. Then we're basically waiting with, you know, our future and fortune in somebody else's hand, which was never going to go our way if you really think about it. But guys, I'll throw it to you. What do you think was the biggest fall flat moment of the 2024 Arizona Diamondbacks? What do you think? Was it a certain signing? Was it a certain play? Or
I think we're all going to agree. Right? Yeah, we're all going to agree that it's got to be the late, right before spring training starts. You throw all that money at Jordan Montgomery. And then you even had Ken Kendrick come out on local airwaves to say that he was to blame for that, and that was a mistake. I don't know about you guys, but I was shocked that an owner of a team would come out and call out that player. I don't know if he was expecting Jordan Montgomery to say, you know, screw this guy, screw this team, I don't want to play here, so I'm not picking up that player option. But for me, I mean, and what's funny is go back to the start of the spring training when that happened. I was the most excited about that signing. I thought it was incredible because we're finally being aggressive. We're finally spending money. And then that just totally backfires. But if I had to pick out one, and I'm sure it's at the top of your guys' list, but it's going to be throwing a big, large chunk of money at Jordan Montgomery and him just being absolutely terrible. Then him turning around, that being Montgomery, picking up that player option, causing you to have to pay him that money this upcoming season, and possibly not allowing you to have the flexibility to sign Christian Walker to a deal. So that would be mine.
Yeah, I think that's pretty easy. And I do agree that that's a big part of it. But Jordan Montgomery, in theory, only pitches every fifth day. I think for me, you know, we can blame the starting pitching for either not being available or not performing to expectations. I mean, hell, we even saw Zach Gallen have a stint where he wasn't looking so hot. Merrill Kelly missed big time. Eduardo Rodriguez didn't play half the season. But for me, it was, you threw all this money at starting pitching, but what did you do about the bullpen? Not that you could foresee Paul Sewald absolutely shitting the bed to the point of losing his closer role, to where I don't think he's even going to be back with this team next year. I think his contract was up, right? And I haven't heard even any rumblings of them even considering re-signing Paul Sewald. And there were a lot of people that, you know, they had the hangover from 2023 where Paul Sewald was a big part of this team and us making the playoffs. But, it, you know, Torrey gives these guys a long leash sometimes. And I think the writing was on the wall, no pun intended, the wall for Paul Sewald. But I think for me, yeah, Montgomery, obviously terrible, garbage, no good. The amount of money you spent on him as well makes that so much worse. But I think the reason we didn't make the playoffs pretty much falls squarely on the bullpen blowing so many games and opportunities.
Yep. I mean, you guys hit it right on the head. I think one thing that kind of discouraged me to start this season as well was the really, really slow start from Corbin Carroll, who still basically turns it on towards the second half of that season. And also the really slow start from Eugenio Suarez. But if you really think about it from the offensive side, Corbin Carroll still steals, what, 30 bases again? Eugenio Suarez leads the team in home runs. Tallman, am I right on that? You know, almost 100 RBIs. He was one of the true catalysts on the offensive end down the stretch. He also helped me win my fantasy baseball league. So, you know, I'm going to give him a little bit more credit on that. But talking about fantasy sports, the way that I was hoping Chris would win in week 15 so I could make the playoffs is what this Arizona Diamondbacks team did to themselves down the stretch with plenty of winnable games, plenty of winnable series within that last 3 weeks. And then you're left hoping that these other teams won't basically have a under the table handshake deal that says, hey, we're going to win this first double, this first of the doubleheader, and then we're just going to sit everybody the second one. You know, putting your destiny into other people's hands is always just a cause for disaster. And it's truly what happened with this D-backs team. But yeah, I mean, guys, have we talked about Christian Walker leaving yet? I don't think so. 3 years, $61 million. I know you touched on it a little bit, but like overall, how are we feeling? End of an era or are we pissed?
I mean, it's hard. Okay, so if he would have got like a 3 year, $75 million, then I would have been like, okay, you know, that's, you know, we talked about this. We saw this coming. I mean, we knew who the free agents were going to be after the season. And, you know, I think we all were agreeing on the fact that he's going to get priced out of the Arizona Diamondbacks payroll, you know? But to see that 3 years, 60, you said $61 million. I mean, it's the qualifying offer was, I think it was $21 million, right? So it was definitely something that you could swing. And then I already mentioned it earlier. It's like, okay, well, there you go. Jordan Montgomery took that $20 million away from him. So now they're not going to throw that extra cash at him, but I can't say I'm surprised that he's not a Diamondback. I'm not, because I'm absolutely not. I think I mentioned before too, that I'm a Christian Walker fan. I'm not going to hope that he goes and falls flat on his face and is just absolutely terrible. But I mean, he is playing for a terrible team that I think that a lot of people absolutely hate. But I'm a little pissed, but I'm not surprised at the same time. And then I'll add on another feeling of emotions here. You know, I'm kind of happy that he got paid here, because he was a late bloomer and he really does earn, or he did earn and deserves to get paid that cash. But I'm not surprised at all that he's not here, but I'm a little salty.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks, because it kind of, I've seen a lot of people really compare this to giving up Paul Goldschmidt, who we thought was at the end of his prime. And then he went on to still continue to have productive years for the Cardinals. But I think, I mean, with Christian Walker, it could be the same thing. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be too optimistic or, you know, deny the fact that it could be the same, but he is going to be, I think, 34 years old when the season starts, 37 the final year of his contract. I think the Diamondbacks just simply didn't want to be tied to 3 years of $20 million being tied up when you may only get one good year. We already saw that he regressed this last season. And yeah, he did miss some games, but his average was down. He had fewer home runs, fewer RBIs, fewer hits. Like, everything was down for him. So, you know, Mike Hazen's a smart guy. I think he looked at the numbers, you know, both financially and production wise, and, you know, made a business decision that the $20 million we're going to use, or the $25 million we're going to use for Christian Walker, let's look at maybe getting two or three players, filling out these other positions of need, because clearly in theory, we should have enough weapons on the offense to where now we need to make sure that our defense is down pack, especially our pitching. I mean, I don't know what's out there in the market, but at the same time, Mike, I'm curious what you think about Christian Walker. But then we turn around, I think, within a couple days of that Christian Walker signing with Texas, and we get Josh Naylor from the Cleveland Guardians. And you know, he's no Christian Walker, but he's not bad. I mean, he's got a big bat, and that's what the role Christian Walker played on offense for us.
And he had a big bat last year, gentlemen. 31 home runs, over 100 RBIs. I love to see that from your first baseman. Didn't hit for average that great, 243. Also struck out 105 times. I'll be 100% honest with you. Don't know much about Josh Naylor. Wasn't watching a lot of Cleveland Guardians baseball last year or over the past 4 years, which is where he's been. But, hey, it's like you say, when you lose somebody like Christian Walker who gives you 25 home runs a year, over 80 RBIs, a sure glove, obviously a three-time gold glover now at the position, I don't know if you're going to be able to really fit in the exact same type of guy and get the same production, right? But I don't hate this. I think I was seeing that the Guardians are getting some heat for – he came from the Guardians, right? I'm not mistaken this here, right?
No, yeah, he's from the Guardians. Okay. Yeah.
All right. For some reason, I thought Twins. I'm like, no, I know it's the Guardians. But they were getting some harsh criticism for the trade, and they were saying it was an absolute loss for them by taking on Slade Ciccone. And hey, yeah, we know what Slade. We know what Slade did for us. Yeah, we won't give him too much flack. There's plenty of negativity that happened in the Valley this year, but gentlemen, I don't hate it. And you got 6 years younger at the position, right? I think the one thing that scares me, probably not as much as, you know, when you first heard the news about Christian Walker, and then people were saying, oh, well, the fill-in's going to be that one-year deal for Paul Goldschmidt. But then he went to the Yankees. I was thinking, oh, no, Pavin Smith's going to be our everyday first baseman. I don't know how to feel about that. I know Pavin has had some good hitting streaks. I don't know how confident I am in him on an everyday basis at the first base position. And I know that Torrey loves him. But when you bring in Josh Naylor, you know, he's a guy who's played over 120 games the past three seasons. So he's basically your everyday first baseman. But I don't hate it. But you're never going to love it when you lose a guy that's been in your system for 8 years and has been one of the franchise guys, you know? It's always going to be tough.
Yeah, and in that way, I think, you know, it's going to be similar. It's crazy how similar it is to Paul Goldschmidt, where it's like we're always going to appreciate what he did here, but it wasn't necessarily his fault that he left. You know, Paul Goldschmidt got traded, Christian Walker. You know, nobody can blame him for not taking the qualifying offer. He wanted multiple years. He is getting up there. This is going to be his last contract. I'm almost sure of it. I think it's very possible the D-backs offered him, you know, 2 years, $20 million or $40 million. And he said, and I heard rumors that he wanted 4 years, and that's why the Yankees deal fell apart, is because he wanted four years, $80 million. And they said, get the fuck out of here. We're not going to give you 4 years. Are you serious? And even with their deep pockets, they weren't going to give him 4 years. So yeah, it finally found a team that would give him three and the right amount of money. And so, you know, props, man, get your bag. You have the accolades. You've been to the highest mountaintop. And honestly, the Astros are a good team. So he stays with a contending franchise where he might be, if he still has aspirations of winning a title, it's not like he's completely abandoned them. It sucks, but I think it will allow this team to remain young and, you know, have more, maybe more chemistry as well. As maybe, I'm not saying Christian Walker didn't, you know, have good rapport with those other guys. I'm almost sure he did, but, you know, add some guys that are closer in age, and I think the chemistry will only improve. Now the question then becomes, how much veteran leadership do you need with such a young team? How much does that apply in baseball? I don't know, but yeah, D-backs, I'm interested to see as we get closer to spring training here in the next few months, you know, what it's going to shake out. Tallman, are you optimistic for the season ahead?
Yes. I mean, it's hard not to be optimistic about a team that has such a good core group of young talent. I mean, it sucks losing one of your better players, but I mean, I was pretty shocked by the Josh Naylor trade. You know, props to the front office for jumping out and trying to, you know, put a Band-Aid on your most recent wound as quick as you possibly can. But I mean, it's hard not to be, like I said, it's hard not to be optimistic because, I mean, you still got Corbin Carroll, you still got Jake McCarthy who turned it on this last season. You got Thomas, you got a lot of, you got Gabriel Moreno, you got a lot of good players still on this roster. Perdomo, you still got a good pitching staff. And then if you're a D-backs fan out there, you're crossing your fingers, hoping Jordan Montgomery figures it the fuck out and he's actually contributing next season. And I don't know. It's we still got a lot of good pieces, right? And then adding Naylor in there, he fills in for that the power in the middle of the order that you lost with Walker. I had to look it up because you pulled up that stat for Naylor, and he said he was 5'11", 250. That's a lot of weight for someone that's 5'11". And then I was looking it up, and there's a lot of people saying that he got traded because he was too fat, which is kind of mean. I don't want to fat shame our new first baseman, but damn, that's a thick boy. But
I mean, where else is the power coming from? It's coming from the belly there, Tallman.
Yeah, in the thighs, right? That 250 is all in the thighs. But no, I'm excited, man. Jeez.
Big boy on the base paths.
Oh man.
Yeah, there's some unflattering pictures of
God, of he our makes boy. That sliding mitt look so small.
So Tallman, I will go back to what you said about the optimism that honestly Arizona Diamondbacks fans should have with this team. You're only two seasons removed from going to the World Series, and the core of that team is still around for sure. Now, Chris, you just keep throwing the shot. Yeah, he's a big guy.
Yeah,
that's fine. See, he doesn't have to. He's not going to have to lug around off of first base very often. So, but you talked about bringing in Josh Naylor as kind of like the quick Band-Aid to work to close the wounds, right? Well, now what's our other wound that we kind of have open either than the back end bullpen work that you still have to do? The DH position with Jock Peterson signing that 2-year deal with the Texas Rangers. What's going on in your head with that? Where do you think the solution comes from that? Is it going to be Pavin Smith kind of situation where he becomes your almost everyday left-handed DH? Is Randall Grichuk still a possibility of an option? Because he's not with the team anymore, is he? You know, and losing another right-handed bat when this offense is so left-handed dominant, you know, where do you see the Diamondbacks possibly going from there?
Yeah, I mean, just to answer the Grichuk thing, he declined the qualifying offer, I think, I just had to look it up. So he's still a free agent, but Grichuk was he was still filling that role in a platoon with Peterson, right? So he was Peterson would hit the righties, Grichuk would be your lefty specialist. So I mean, even if you brought Grichuk back, even though he ended the season just absolutely on fire, he's still only half of that fill. So if I had to guess, I would say that player is not on the roster right now. And that's me being optimistic. I think they'll probably find somebody, a veteran bat that doesn't get signed on this early frenzy of free agency. And they come to the D-backs because, you know, this is probably their best option. They're going to come to a young team that's going to be competitive and potentially make another run in the postseason. So I would say that player is not on the team right now. But if the player was on the team, I mean, I think Pavin's about due, man. I mean, he's due soon for a chance for an extended period of playing time. Cause he comes up and you know how hard it is to get in a groove, you know, with these guys coming in, you know, hitting major league pitchers when you only get a couple at bats in a row, you don't get to string together several at bats to be able to get your timing down, get in that groove. I mean, it's tough. And then you see Pavin just come up, plays for a week, and then he has a game where he hits 3 home runs. So I think they're going to give Pavin a larger chunk of playing time because I mean, honestly, I think he deserves it, you know? So I do think we'll probably see Pavin at DH, and then I bet you there's probably another player that's not on this roster.
I think that's the first thing you want to look for, right? Isn't who can you get from outside to come in like the Jock Peterson last year, like Grichuk did. I'd love to get Grichuk back. But look, if we're just talking about who is already on the roster and who we know is going to be here, I think it's very interesting what we see in the outfield. There's only three guys you're going to play out there. And Tallman, like who do you want those three guys to be? Obviously, you're putting Corbin out there. really like what Jake McCarthy did last year.
You want to see Gurriel be the DH?
I want to see Gurriel be the DH. Can you imagine an outfield with Alec Thomas, Jake McCarthy, Corbin Carroll? Nothing's touching the ground.
Speed on speed, baby.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
You'll have the quickest outfield in the Major League Baseball.
And you have a solid designated hitter that can hit both left-handed and right-handed pitchers. I mean, that's a great but I don't know.
Because then
I like the idea.
Because then that still gives you Pavin Smith to have there available for rest and whatnot. Because obviously you could probably have a rotation of those guys. And then you still have Jorge Barroza, who I'm not a fan of, but the D-backs did use him last year in certain situations. I think he's going to spend most of his time in AAA, if I had to guess. But that's, again, so I guess to kind of pivot from that same question about how do you fill the DH spot, what do you do in the outfield if you don't have Gurriel or Smith be the DH? One of those guys, like Smith, will have to go down to AAA, right? You're not going to send Alec Thomas back down.
I don't know. He finished down, or he came back at the end, but he struggled, though, too, offensively. Alec Thomas did.
He did, but doesn't it seem like the year before when we went on the World Series run, that was Jake McCarthy, right? So it's like they are going back and forth with both of them have really solid outfield skills. I mean, web gems every other game, it seems like, but then they struggle for consistent times at the plate, and it makes them hard to keep them in the lineup consistently. But yeah, I would almost love to like throw them in the fire, Chris. I'm with you. Putting Lourdes at the DH position, who can hit both lefties and righties, and kind of getting him out of that short corner and left field so he's not having to, you know, showcase his noodle arm too often. Why not? You get a little bit younger. Then you can almost make the decision moving forward too, because you got to remember you have some of these other guys that are starting to, you know, move up within the ranks, you know. After another year of Lawler, you know, is he getting close to doing anything, or are you going to have to move off of him? And then, you know, the big other name, Andrew Jones, he's probably still a few years away, but you still have these guys waiting in the wings, and you have to start figuring out how you solidify your offensive systems and then use that capital to build out the resources that you need, like in the bullpen, because we haven't done any of that yet in the offseason so far.
No, I honestly haven't heard of any move other than not getting guys and then getting Naylor. Tallman, have you heard of any other moves the D-backs have made yet?
No, I haven't. I've only really been following all the major signings, because baseball is just absolutely fucking ridiculous now, and I'm waiting for the day where they actually put in a payroll or a salary cap, because it's just getting disgusting with this, with all the teams that we know that just keep buying, spending, deferring. So I haven't really been watching closely. I've just been getting all the updates, you know, so-and-so signed. The first one I've really paid attention to was the Naylor one. What about you guys?
I just pulled up the transactions list here, and that's pretty much it.
So I'm not missing anything. Okay.
Go ahead, Mike.
You saw they claimed right-handed pitcher Seth Martinez from the Houston Astros. That's the only other additions they've made so far.
Yeah, other than a few random minor league contracts that they've agreed to terms with guys you wouldn't even know the name of, and I didn't even know the name of. What is it? Aramis Garcia, Connor Kaiser, Francis Aquino. And then there were the coaching staff changes. Bench coach Jeff Bennister is returning. Dave McKay, first base coach, is returning. These guys are all returning. Joe Mather, hitting coach. Damian Easley, assistant hitting coach. And the new coaches are Brian Kaplan, a minor league pitching coach, or I'm sorry, major league pitching coach, Wellington Cepeda. We don't have to go through this. This is coaching changes.
Yeah, because they got rid of Brent Strom, right? The pitching guru?
Yeah. And there was...
And then Parrish Chica left.
I saw who... Major league pitching coach. Yeah, the Brian Kaplan guy. I think I had seen that people were not so happy with his promotion into that position, but he had been
I think we talked about him before.
He had been an assistant pitching coach before, and he was doing something with our minor league as well. Like he was like the minor league like director or something like that for Triple A. But regardless, I mean, how much do you think these coaching changes are they going to have any impact on this team? Because a lot of people criticize Torrey Lovello, and every single season it's time to move on from Torrey. Oh, I don't like how Torrey manages the bullpen. I've even said it on this stream. He gives guys a little bit of a longer leash than I'd like. We all play our armchair quarterback, but you know, do you think these coaching changes are going to be making a difference?
Well, I will say, and I want to jump in here, you know, Brent Strom was the scapegoat, right? The way that this starting lineup really faltered. But I mean, how many times did we have three or more of our starters going all at once within just a 2-week period? Did it happen at all this past season? I mean, Eduardo Rodriguez missed the first 3 to 4 months of the season. Then Merrill Kelly was struggling with the cramps all season long. Zach Gallen was really kind of holding his own. And then you would say probably our best overall pitcher for consistency throughout the season was Brandon Pfaadt, who's the youngest guy in your starting lineup. I think sometimes for a specific unit to get a culture shock and really kind of look themselves in the mirror and say, hey, what do I need to be doing a little bit better? Sometimes it does take that scapegoat, unfortunately, Chris. And I'm sure it's going to be a conversation we're going to get into when we start talking about the Arizona Cardinals and Drew Petsing. But I would say I'm interested to see who they brought in. Who did they bring in for the pitching coach?
So the major league pitching coach is that guy, Brian Kaplan, I was talking about. And I was trying to find it here on the fly because I thought I had read that he had been, because it says he was assistant pitching coach for the Philadelphia Phillies from 2022 to 2024. Okay, so I was wrong. I must be thinking of a different guy. But so he's been, you know, at the professional level. He's 42 years old. So, you know, a young guy coming in here, getting an opportunity on a coaching staff. You know, it's just a young guy in baseball working his way up through the ranks. And I don't know what his ties were, if he had any, but clearly I'm sure they went through some type of interview process and felt that he was the best option. So I really don't know anything about this guy. Honestly, I don't. But I think change when you have such an epic failure that last season was, because I mean, guys, I think our expectations were high, but they weren't unrealistic. We knew from the jump that it would have to be a wild card, that we would have to make it to the playoffs through the wild card. Like, as far as expectations go, that's like the bottom of like high. You know what I'm saying? Like, if there's a scale, like there's like Cardinals, like we know we're not like, if we make the playoffs, that's a miracle. That's fantastic. This is a trash season. But you know, the Suns, we know the Suns are going to make the playoffs. It's just, where are they going to be seated? So those expectations are a little higher. For this Diamondbacks team, like, we knew they weren't going to beat the Dodgers, but come the fuck on. Like, our team is talented. We made the playoffs and made it to the World Series the year before. All that to say is, I think change was needed after such an epic failure and a collapse. And yeah, you know, maybe Strom was the scapegoat. Maybe some of these other coaches that changed hands were the scapegoat. Some of these guys that didn't re-sign potentially felt some type of way, and that's why they didn't want to come back. So I think changing things up, you know, without doing a full rebuild can be a good thing. I hope so, you know, because it could go either way. And I know that's Captain Obvious here, but it's either going to be good, bad, or indifferent, and only time will tell. But I know personally, for me, I think we gotta, it's the players. We need them to be put in the best position night in and night out, but they also have to communicate. Like, I know there was a time when Alec Thomas came back from an injury, and he ran around the bases one time and came up to Torrey and he was like, hey, I'm not right. And they sent him back down for 2 weeks. So it's like, if these guys are building a culture where they can be honest and communicate, that needs to continue to be something that's on the forefront of their mind. And I think it is. So hopefully we can put together a watchable product and a competitive one this next season. But I don't know, man. I don't know.
The other thing I will say, to a certain extent, this team did overachieve last year. They were statistically the best offense in the MLB. They put up the most runs.
That's fair.
So I'm with you. When the other side falls flat and basically loses you the potential to go to the playoffs because they didn't keep their end of the bargain, changes need to be made. And they did that. So you got to give them credit. But don't be going out and talking bullshit about Ken Kendrick not spending his money when he just spent the most that he ever has. That's just a general statement out. I'm not talking towards you two. Saying out to Arizona Diamondbacks fans in general. Make sure you're paying attention to what's happening on the back end work, not just what's on the field too. You know, they're making the right strides to make this a more consistent winner in the Valley.
Yeah, I actually did. I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because I did pull that up when Tallman was talking about it earlier. And it's true. We had the 13th highest payroll out of 30 baseball teams this last season, like $173 million for our payroll. The most that Ken Kendrick has ever spent. It's not like we're the Oakland A's where they're spending 75, 80 million. Like there's like nothing. Like people want to be critical of ownership and I get it, but this isn't a time where I feel like it was warranted. Like he even went out and got Montgomery when he didn't need to do that. We could have had that $20 million in our pocket, but instead he saw the writing on the wall where this team was at, that we just came off the World Series, that we needed to reload, add some more pieces, and that pitching was a big part of that. And like Tallman, I was excited too. We were sitting here ranting and raving, talks of champagne and glory. We might have the best starting five pitching rotation in Major League Baseball, and it just didn't come together. And Mike, it almost, you know, kind of reminds me of another Valley team where you get all these superstars together on one team and you scapegoat a coach or two. Next thing you know, you got Mike Budenholzer and we're talking about the Suns, of course. Man, Bradley Beal, hate that guy. I don't like that guy.
You don't like the guy. Tom, do you like Bradley Beal? I don't know if you've ever really like said,
yeah.
You're on the fence at all.
He just had a good game yesterday, right?
He had a solid game last night. Yeah, 27, so. Four rebounds, four.
So we'll get another one in March.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, I don't know him personally, so I can't say I hate him. I hate the way that he's just not available, because it doesn't matter what sport you're playing. The absolute best characteristic any player can have is availability, right? Because if he's not playing, then what the fuck does it matter? So I think it comes down to the point where it's fatigue. It's like, and this goes to the entire big three. The fatigue is there's always someone hurt. It just so happens that Bradley Beal is the one that is hurt the most and misses the most games. So I won't say I hate him. It's tough when basically Book and Beal play the same position. So, you know, and can you look back and say this trade has not worked out so far? I think you definitely can. And obviously Bradley Beal is not the 30-point a night scorer like he used to be with the Wizards. That's absolutely obvious. But when you see him flash like he did on Christmas, it's a little intriguing. But at the end of the day, that's not what he is. He's just here to be the supporting cast for Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. But no, I don't hate him. I think he's a nice guy, though. He's well-spoken in his interviews.
Okay, you know, he can be a nice guy. He can be a good for a game or two here and there. But if he's not available, Tom, and you just said it, he has the worst attribute of any player, and he's not available. Mike, I think it's an interesting point that Tallman brings up in talking about saying that we won the Bradley Beal trade, which saw us get rid of Chris Paul. And while I don't necessarily disagree to the extent that we got the better player in that deal, I think that there are bigger implications than just moving an undesirable player in Chris Paul, because now we're handcuffed to Bradley Beal's $50 million contract for the next three seasons. And at the time, it was four seasons. Mike, this is kind of an extension of a conversation we had on Sunday when we were out hooping. I mean, hindsight's 2020. Now looking back, would you still pull the trigger on that deal to send Chris Paul?
You know what, Chris? You're probably not going to love my answer. I still would pull the trigger to move Chris Paul. Now, is it to get Bradley Beal? If we can go back? No. I think it was time for Chris Paul to move on, for the structure of what this team was, the same way that DeAndre Ayton needed to move on with his career. It seems like he already needs to move on with the Portland Trailblazers. But what have we seen in the NBA probably over the past 20 years, gentlemen? I mean, how often does a true big three really work together? It doesn't. It doesn't work together very consistently. You might have the one-offs that win a championship or two, but if you're talking about longevity and consistently finding themselves in the finals, I mean, if I think about teams like the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors that had that four-year run, they had really true benchmark pieces coming off of their second units. Some people want to say the big three was for Golden State was Steph, Klay, and Draymond Green. No, guys, it was Klay Thompson and Steph Curry who were handling the load. And then Draymond Green did all the dirty work. And then what happened with that Cleveland team? It was LeBron James and Kyrie Irving handling the scoring load. And then Kevin Love did all the dirty work. And occasionally they would throw in 20 points here or there, right? But it just doesn't seem like this version of a big three knows where to find and fit within any type of role, either than if Kevin Durant is on the floor, the other two guys need to take a step back and take 10 or less shots a game, which is kind of crazy to me. Because I know that Kevin Durant is still a prolific scorer and he can get it done. But these other guys are too shifty. They're too confident with the basketball to not get them more involved on the offensive end. And it seems like Bradley Beal is always the one that consistently finds himself on the outside looking in. But I will, you know, touch on what Tallman said too. Bradley Beal had a great game last night. And going back to that Sunday conversation that we had, Chris, which my last 6 months conversation about Bradley Beal has been, when Bradley Beal's on the floor, what does he do better than anybody? Can you tell me, right? That's been the question that I've been asking anybody who wants to talk Phoenix Suns with me. And what did Bradley Beal do yesterday? When Kevin Durant wasn't on the floor, he was the best scorer on the floor. He was attacking the basket. He was finding his mid-range. He was confident in his offensive game. And it's something that we just don't see enough of consistently. And that's where all the rumblings, and once Jimmy Butler started to come into the fold about a possibility of a trade front, the first and only piece, either than Yusuf Nurkic, that people wanted to move was Bradley Beal. But as Tone Capone said, yeah, Pat Riley said he ain't moving Jimmy, but I think it's just smoke screens. We'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks before the trade deadline. But I don't know, Tommy, would you pull that move, that CP3 for Bradley Beal move again? Or are you like me? Would you have tried to move some other pieces?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of leaning towards you. I would have tried, because I mentioned before, it's Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, they play the same position. So now it's you have someone who should be a two is now trying to play a three. So could you have worked it differently? I couldn't even tell you another trade that would have worked back then. But it's easy to say, I'm excited to bring on Bradley Beal because you're expecting him to be another superstar, but he has not been a superstar. And it's already been mentioned, you're handcuffed to his $50 million deal, and your flexibility right now to make any move is impossible, literally impossible, because he has a no trade clause. And if you expect him to waive that, I mean, I don't know. But I think, yes, moving Chris Paul, but I don't know if Bradley Beal is a move and taking on that amount of money. I mean, thank God for the owner, and that he's willing to be in this upper apron luxury tax and just paying out the ass for this team. But I don't know. They're putting themselves in a hard spot to where this year is, it's literally do or die. I mean, you got to do it. If you got to cash in this year, we got to win a championship, or we're going to be talking about the same thing, the same big three. And then Kevin Durant's another year older, Bradley Beal's another year older. So it's teams in a tough spot.
Yeah. And I'm with you there, Mike. I do think my problem is not with the trading of Chris Paul. I do think it was time for him to go. I think I would have liked to have seen them not get Bradley Beal, but get a contract that is expiring and one that we'd be off of by now, or this would be the last year of it, to give us some more flexibility in the future without being so handcuffed. But I say that all without having any research in front of me about who was on an expiring contract around that time. Were there any teams that would have taken on Chris Paul's contract at that time? It's crazy how that ended up working out, because he didn't even ever step foot in Washington, D.C. He ended up in Golden State for that year. And then did they trade him to San Antonio, or did he go there on free agency?
I think he signed because his deal was up, because we traded away the expiring contract instead of bringing one in.
Well, and there you go. That's exact. So the Wizards probably feel like they made out like bandits. They had seen enough of Bradley Beal being banged up, because it's not like he just came to Phoenix and started having these issues, fellas. He was injured and on the shelf often in Washington as well. So I think in that regard, I think Washington kind of, you know, won the trade in a sense, but they're a garbage franchise, and they're not getting any better anytime soon. But no, I do think if we could have gotten an expiring contract, that would have been ideal. But, you know, it is what it is. I do want to go back, Mike, to what you're talking about with the big three experiment, because we have seen certain situations labeled the big three, and you highlight a lot of them really well. I also think about one of the early examples of that, I think, were like, was it Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, where if you think about it, these always end up kind of being two-headed monsters, with the third guy just being like the number one role player in line. And I think Ray Allen was kind of that guy. He was just kind of the corner 3-and-D guy. Chris Bosh was kind of the rebounder, you know, make a shot here and there. But the guys really pouring in the buckets were obviously Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, where the Suns, in theory, would have a chance to actually, if they can figure out the mold and the formula, execute the full vision of a big three, because I think these guys are, at the core of their game, able to be that guy. Like we just saw in this Christmas Day game against the Nuggets, where when called upon and when he was the option on the court, Bradley Beal can be that dude. He can be the best player on the court. But when he's on the court with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, he becomes the third best player all of a sudden. And how do you incorporate that? Can you have all three of these guys playing as their best self while they're on the court at the same time? I know I've seen with Devin Booker a tendency for him to defer to Kevin Durant at times where he needs to go and take control. And I think Kevin Durant is so developed in his game where he knows when he has to be the dude. But Bradley Beal and Devin Booker, I think, need to be comfortable also being the dude when Kevin Durant is on the court. I unfortunately am not hopeful that that experiment will play out the way that we all, you know, fantasize it will, because it never happens, right? Everything we dream of never comes true, whether it's the Diamondbacks pitching rotation, Kyler Murray being a good quarterback, or the Phoenix Suns having a healthy big three. It's just never possible,
man. Well, because it's also crazy, man. Like, it's not that we have all three of them at the same time. It's when one of them gets healthy finally and comes back, it is that game that all three of them return where another one goes out. You can like mark that down, that that's what's going to happen every single time this team plays together. And then, yes, second half of last year, they did have, you know, better camaraderie and were able to stay a little bit more healthy going into the playoffs. But then what happens? The camaraderie basically stops and you get mollywopped by the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are now in a similar position with the Phoenix Suns, who, if you think about it, great start this season. We're all talking about these absolute, you know, look at the depth that we have. Look at all these additions. Mason Plumlee, Tyus Jones. You re-sign Royce O'Neal. You bring back Grayson Allen for extended contract. You know, You bring in these young rookies like Ryan Dunn and Osu Igodoro. It's going to be so hard to juggle all of these pieces to play everybody. And then once these big three guys go down, you forget how to run offensive sets. It seemed like guys are too timid when it comes down to, you know, having the opportunity to step up. And then also it's our defense. Our defense is bad. Once again, gentlemen, it's been our downfall over the past month and a half as well, to where you're looking at the right before Christmas, you're not even in the play-in tournament if the postseason were to start today. Now, it's still semi-early within the season, so that win catapulted the Suns up to eighth, if you want to say it's catapulting them up. But yeah, going back to what you said, Chris, it's hard to put your stock and faith into, once all these guys are healthy, they're going to be able to put it together once again. It was great to start the season. Yeah, they were 8-1, but they were almost kind of like the Kansas City Chiefs of the NBA to start. Like, you're winning all these games where you probably shouldn't have. And then the true light comes out and you see where this team is, which is a middle of the road team that's really top heavy, struggles at the center position, whether it be your starting center, Yusuf Nurkic, your backup, Mason Plumlee, or, you know, your stretch four, a guy who has to step in a little bit at the five as well, and Osu Igodoro, because he's young. You know, like, there's still a lot of inefficiencies on this team, and it's tough because, like Tolman said, the timer is almost at zero here, gentlemen. And if some big moves aren't made, it's going to be interesting to see what happens next year. And it can't be another head coaching change. It just can't be. Because like you said, at some point, it's not the coach, it's the players. They got to figure out how to coexist.
Yeah, I think you said it perfect, Mike. If we don't make a push, a deep push, and win a few playoff series, like, you can't waste Devin Booker's prime spinning your wheels and getting nowhere. And, you know, having Kevin Durant here has been awesome. I would have loved to have had him 5 to 10 years ago, but, you know, we'll take the KD that we can get now. And then Brad Beal, you know, I said I hate Brad Beal. I'm just frustrated with Brad Beal and his stint here on the Suns, because I think he's probably a good guy and he is fun to watch when healthy and productive, but it just hasn't been the case in his time here with the Suns, and it sucks. It sucks. But Mike, Cody, I mean, Tallman, I don't know who Cody is. They say that the NBA season doesn't really start until after Christmas. So we'll have to just wait and see what happens. There's still plenty of season left, but a team that's winding down their season with great disappointment after getting our hopes up so high, the Arizona Cardinals. Man, they get to have some leftover from last year that we get to talk about at the beginning of 2024. Now we're here at the end of 2024 as they're winding down their season, heading into the new year. Tallman, man, what are you thinking about the Arizona Cardinals these days?
What did you guys think about that game in Carolina?
I almost vomited.
Yeah.
First quarter.
So I got to watch it at a bar in Las Vegas. And believe it or not, I had Las Vegas Raiders fans that felt bad for me at the end of that overtime when the Cardinals lost and the announcer goes, they're now eliminated from playoff contention. So to be at a point where you have Raiders fans that feel sorry for you, you know something's not going right. But I had a feeling, I mean, it's everyone laughs at the trap game, but then you go to overtime and what was it, 36-30, we lose that game against Carolina. And that was a game that we all had circled the entire year. We're going to win this game. And then going into the game, it became I know we were going to win this game, but now we absolutely have to win this game or we can kiss the rest of the season goodbye. And it didn't happen. You go down in that game early. I mean, hell of a comeback though, to push that thing to overtime. But at the end of the day, it's another loss. It's another wasted season. And to look at it as a whole, I think we were delusional to think that Marvin Harrison was going to come in here and absolutely change this offense. It's easy to say that now. It's hard to say that when you draft him fourth overall. I keep getting that wrong. Fourth. Okay. Yeah. Cause last time I said third and then you called me out on that, Mike. So it was easy to think that when we drafted him, but I mean, the growing pains are there. This kid, he needs another season. He needs a full off season. He needs to work. He needs to spend extra time with Kyler Murray. He needs to go to California with him, whatever the hell. Kyler goes to Texas, California. I don't know which one he goes to now, but he needs to go with Kyler everywhere that dude goes to practice in the off season, because they need to figure out this connection, because it's obviously not there. And we need Marvin Harrison to step up. We need him to be what everybody expect him to be coming into this year for this offense to absolutely click. And at the same time, we need Kyler Murray to not be an average quarterback. We need him to be a good quarterback to a superstar. And he had glimpses this season, but you talk about the Suns timer running out. I don't know when the Kyler Murray timer is running out, because this NFL is, what have you done for me lately? It's the not for long league, right? And he's going into his seventh season next year. And it usually doesn't take a franchise quarterback to figure it out in seven seasons. You know, usually that franchise quarterback is going to a different franchise, right? And figuring it out there after a change of scenery. But it's just disappointing, because, I mean, coming in, I thought we nailed the draft. I mean, you look at that top point there on the screen, draft Marvin Harrison and Darius Robinson in the first round. I mean, we were stoked about that Darius Robinson pick. You know, one of our weakest positions, or our front seven was terrible. We needed a game wrecker on that defensive line. Darius Robinson comes in, he struggles with an injury, doesn't see the field for the first three fourths of the season. Then he comes in and he's playing in the games now, but you don't hear his jersey number called. He's not making an impact. So it's just disappointing. But again, it's, you know, it's like I said with Harrison, it was maybe unfair to expect him to come in with all that pressure and be, you know, a top 10 receiver in the league. But I can't, the biggest thing that sticks with me, and it's just so disappointing. I mean, we were in first place at one point. I mean, it's not often that you see the 49ers absolutely just having a down season, just being killed by the injury bug. They're in last place right now in the division, or maybe we're tied for them. I don't know. I was very upset after Sunday. But you go into the bye week, you're 6-4. You come out just absolutely shit the bed. I just – the momentum just flew out of the building. Who do you blame for that? I don't know. Do you blame the bye week? I just blame the whole team in general. It's just unacceptable that you can carry such momentum into a bye week and come out so flat on the other end of it. Granted, we had some favorable matchups going into the bye. Coming out, we apparently just can't beat the Seahawks. You know, and the Seahawks are playing in a game right now against the Chicago Bears, who we kicked the shit out of. And the Seahawks are winning 6-3, and there's 31 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Seattle's no game wrecker. They're not Goliath, right? So I don't know. It's for you to lose in 3 weeks twice against Seattle, one of those losses where they totally outplayed you on every aspect of the game, and then for you to fight like hell against a good Minnesota team but come out empty-handed in that game, to go 0-3 right out of the bye and just absolutely just destroy any momentum this football team had. And they didn't have a lot, but it's just so disappointing. And we've said it 100 times, where this was your opportunity to actually win this division, where you've played in this division in the last handful of years. It's been, you got to either beat the Niners because they're the juggernaut. They're Super Bowl favorites the last couple of years. And then you got the Rams, who won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And then Seattle, it's just a missed opportunity. And it's just sad, really sad. And what a way to get knocked out of playoff contention against Carolina. It's, I don't know. It's just disgusting. And it was an absolute missed opportunity. Sorry, that was long-winded. I apologize, fellas.
No, I mean, Tallman, you made a lot of really good points. It's just a very disappointing season. And what you said about Marvin Harrison, I totally agree. I was on the bandwagon, drinking the Kool-Aid, thinking Marvin Harrison Jr. was going to come in here and break records, and him and Kyler were just going to have an instant connection, and it would be like stepbrothers. They're going to become best friends, and they're going to have bunk beds and a whole lot of space for activities. We just didn't see that happen. And, you know, there were some bright spots. It's not like there wasn't any good that came out of the Cardinals season. I think Trey McBride continues to take leaps and bounds forward, both figuratively and literally, leaping over defenders throughout the season as he continues to become our tight end of the future. After Budda Baker requested a trade 2 years ago, now he re-signed a three-year extension. We keep our captain of the defense and a cornerstone of our defense, a guy that plays with true heart. And like, when you talk about building a culture, you need a guy like Budda Baker in your locker room. So I think that's absolutely awesome. But I can't not talk about Kyler Murray and the whole situation with the offense. It's like, I know we get on here and we have these same conversations, but it's just not getting any better, guys. He isn't able to see downfield, and he's not throwing downfield. And we've had coaches come and go, and it's not working out with Kyler. And I mean, Mike, at this point, I don't want to keep having the Kyler conversation, but I just think I need to take a beat and let you talk about the Redbirds for a minute.
Hey, as long as Kyler Murray finds himself in the black and red, it will always be a point of contention for so many different fans. He is just such a divisive figure. There are some people who have spent the entire 6 years defending him, seeing what he did his rookie year, thinking that the absolute upper echelon of Kyler Murray would be coming soon. And now we're at 6 years, and he is throwing one of the most egregious interceptions to possibly end a game that I've ever seen in my tenure, in my life of watching Arizona Cardinals football, gentlemen. That interception he threw last week was inexcusable. It was disgusting. And it really kind of puts a damper. It should put a damper on any Kyler Murray defender. Because how many, and then he gets another opportunity and doesn't get it done. And then what happens? It goes to, he leads a drive to go and tie the game to go to overtime. But then the defense gets you the stop and you have another opportunity to go and win the game, and he can't do it again. We're going to have so many different conversations in the offseason about Kyler Murray. But one thing I really want to talk about with the Arizona Cardinals this year is, I think, They definitely changed narratives or changed trends of what we thought was going to happen, right? We thought this offense was going to be high-flying, and at points it was, but what really did your team in overall, you know, especially in those 2 weeks against Seattle? It was your offense. The defense kind of came back to light, but yeah, inexcusable to give up 36 points to the Carolina Panthers and have Chuba Hubbard looking like a first team all pro out there for a 3-win Carolina Panthers team, you know. But it was the same thing. It's like, did we really think that we were going to be playing meaningful football in December? Probably not. The glimmer of hope wants to be shining through. Like, it is peeking out so very, very, it's in the very dark corner of my mind right there, coming out. And it will come out eventually, but I'm just so disappointed with what happened this year with this Arizona Cardinals team. Because, you know, guys, we always talk about updating the expectations. And the expectation of this team after week 10, when you're in first place, is to be a playoff team. And I think with what the schedule held in front of them, for a collapse like this, to lose 4 out of 5 and to lose some just absolute asinine ways by, unfortunately, your quarterback making some mistakes, it's brought up these questions that are going to be very prevalent this entire offseason. And it's hard to sit here and say that there is hope. There is optimism. There should be. You should be confident in that. But it's just downright heart-wrenching the way that this season ended. And then the last thing I will say on Marvin Harrison Jr., I got to touch on this. didn't this guy not go through any of the combine stuff and do all this kind of stuff because he was making sure that he was pro ready? It didn't show this first year. So he has a lot of work to do. Yeah. But I'm confident. I'm very confident in Marvin and what he's going to be able to do. Just instead of, yeah, he could be stepbrothers with Kyler Murray, but also, you know, go have a sleepover with your dad and work with your dad a little bit. Maybe you'll get that Hall of Fame DNA coming on to you one more time. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe his dad could teach him how to find separation in the NFL because he's struggling to do that.
Attack the football on a catch.
Oh, man. Okay, so I did want to add another thing because my whole rant was extremely negative. And then I had Chris follow up. He said, well, there were some bright spots with Trey McBride and, you know, retaining Buda Baker here for the next handful of years. I got to give props to James Conner because, I mean, James Conner was this offense's identity. To it, it was a strength and it was also a weakness because this team offensively couldn't do anything without James Conner. But, man, that really makes me grateful for him. And he's a hell of a football player. And, again, I've said it before, I'm just grateful and in awe that James Conner is an Arizona Cardinal. And he is just – he was my bright spot for this year. But just him being the identity is – you can't – that can't be it, you know. That can't be it. So Kyler Murray's got to figure it out.
And James Conner made it 14 and a half weeks. 15 and a half.
He did.
Right? 15 and a half. Yeah. Hopefully he plays this weekend.
Coleman, you know who's still playing.
Oh,
your boy Michael Wilson. Oh, yeah.
Wilson's going to play the whole season, isn't he?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah. They got to get him involved too. Like, there's just some soul searching to be done on the offensive side of the football this offseason for sure. And the beautiful thing is they still got two games to kind of start doing it now.
You're excited about some zombie football here, Mike?
Yeah, I'm excited because that's all I'm going to get for another freaking 7-8 months, Tallman.
Some business decisions here. I mean, you would hope that's not the case, though. I mean, you would hope after how this team under John Gannon ended the season last year, where we had absolutely nothing to play for in those last couple of weeks, and then Kyler Murray coming back, showing promise. I mean, you would hope these guys are just chomping at the bit to absolutely spoil a Rams playoff, the Rams playoff hopes. I hope we go in there and I hope we fucking play a hell of a game and we beat the Rams, because that would just be a feather in your cap, since you don't have a cap to put a feather in anymore to go to the playoffs, but at least you can ruin it for the Rams and the city of LA. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I think they will. And I 100% hope they do for John Gannon, because you only get 17 of these games a year. You're not getting any playoff games this year, and you don't do anything in the preseason games. You don't play your starters. The preseason games are very, very, very much useless for the Arizona Cardinals, the way they've decided to utilize them, in not seeing what their starters can do. And maybe they did the right thing. Maybe it wouldn't have made a difference if Marvin Harrison Jr. had two dozen snaps. It probably wouldn't matter. So maybe that's true. But in this case, this isn't the same as the preseason, because it's a pro offense against a pro defense, 52-man roster against 52-man roster. Whether the other team sits or starts guys, irrelevant. They're still on the roster. They're still there. And it's going to be the best competition and best measure of these guys' talent you're going to get between now and the beginning of the next season. And it sucks that now that's the mindset. You have to switch your mindset. Now we're not really, we're thinking about next season already. So I imagine these next, what, two games, the Rams and the Niners, these next two games, we're thinking about next season and who's going to be on this roster next season. So I think there's going to be a lot of guys playing for a job too. You know, this is whether they're going to be on this team or another team, they need to get that footage that their agent can take and say, hey, you know, buddy did X, Y, Z. This is why he deserves this much money. I think we will see some life out of this Cardinals team, but what that looks like, I don't know. It was overall very disappointing, but I think it's going to end up not being very far off from our predictions, guys, if I'm correct in saying that.
That was the only thing that we probably got right about this Arizona Cardinals team, because we thought their defense was going to be atrocious, which at some points was the only reason why this team was winning. We thought their offense was going to be high-flying, which for the matter of fact, it just was not. There were a decent amount of games where we scored over 30 points, but you know, how often was it from not just mistakes or just god awful teams that we were playing? And then, oh, I guess we did get the front seven was going to be atrocious. Like our pass rush is still horrible, but yeah, one of us is probably going to get this record spot on. And unfortunately, Chris, is probably going to be you, because are we really going to beat the Rams this weekend? And then we'll probably put it together and beat the 49ers. So they're going to go 8-9. So,
yeah, because I think you guys had the same record, right? And it was just a different path to get there.
Yep, we had 9-8. We were the optimists of the group.
You know, I happen to be able to be a bit of a foreseer. Not the full picture, but a little bit. Mike and I predicted that the Baltimore Ravens will win the Super Bowl this year. Bit of a rocky start to their season, but it seems like they're kind of figuring it out. Last season, I predicted the Chiefs correctly. So if I go 2-for-2 and I get the Cardinal season right, I might have to start buying lottery tickets more regularly. But there's going to be, like Mike said, there's going to be plenty of time for us to talk doom and gloom and Kyler Murray and the Cardinals in the offseason. But there were some other, you know, as we kind of wind down on this stream and in the end of the year, there were some other bright spots that I think we should talk about. I did mention one at the top, of course, ASU football, the men's football defy all odds. They win the Big 12 championship. They were after last place finish prediction. Yeah, they were predicted to finish last place, ended up with the fourth seed in the first ever 12-team college football playoffs. Incredible. Honestly, so incredible. Mike, we were watching that Big 12 championship game together, and it was never in doubt.
It really wasn't. And it was funny, too. It was the first time I had really sat down and watched a game with all Sun Devils fans in a very long time, other than, you know, being at Sun Devil Stadium. And as soon as Iowa State scored that first touchdown, there were like four or five guys who stood up to walk over to the sports book to put more money down on ASU, because that's how confident they were. And also the spread got a little bit better on that too. But man, impressive. I know a lot of people are up in the air about, you know, now having to get Texas instead of Clemson. But you, as an outsider looking in, guys, you know, ASU is not my first team, I will say that. But as an outsider looking in, you got to be absolutely thrilled and excited about not only what this team did this year, but what's in front of them. You can continue to shock and you know, go against all odds and continue to move forward within this college football playoff. But then you also have to look at what Kenny Dillingham has done already for recruiting and some of these high-profile guys that are starting to transition over to ASU. I think it's just really the building blocks for this football program, and ASU is going to be good for a number of years moving forward. So all things are bright in the valley for them. But man, Tallman, what do you think? Do you think ASU got a shot against the big boys of Texas? Come on, man. Let's be honest.
Man, okay. So the current spread, as shown, odds provided by ESPN Bet, it's 12.5. We were talking before the stream. I saw it as high as 14.5. So, I mean, what that tells you is they're getting some action on ASU. And you bet your ass I'm betting on ASU come New Year's Day, that's for sure. Because who doesn't love an underdog story? And what about the ASU being the ultimate underdog for the season predictions? They're supposed to be the worst team in the Big 12. And then look at that. Look what happens when no one believes in them and everyone's against them. So I'm not counting them out. I mean, I don't think you can count any team out who has Cam Scataboo on their team and playing the way he has this season. I mean, the guy is an absolute wrecking ball. So do they have a chance? Damn it. I don't want to sound like a total homer right now, but if we're either going to play this game really, really close, and it's going to come down to who possesses the ball last, or this team's going to get absolutely blown, their door is blown off, and we're going to get absolutely blown out by Texas. But I'm telling you right now, I'm putting my money on them, and I think they got a shot. Absolutely.
It scares me having optimism and hope for a team. I think There are a number of things that scare me. Obviously, Texas being a very talented team and a reason that they're in the playoff and they won the first round. But that right there is also the amount of time it's been since the Big 12 championship game. I mean, we're looking at almost a month by the time this game is played on the 1st of January. That could go, you know, it's the rust versus rest conversation. We've talked about it a bunch. We talked about it with the Cardinals coming out of the bye week. We talked about it on our big ASU college football stream. Is that amount of time going to be good where we're going to get healthy and we're going to practice and we're going to game plan and be ready to go? Or is it going to be that it takes a quarter or two for this team to really get rolling? And then all of a sudden we're behind and playing catch up and not able to close any gap that Texas might open up, as well as the safety whose name escapes me again, being suspended for the first half of this game because of a targeting call in the Big 12 championship game.
Shamari Simmons. Yep. I believe they appealed it, but it was a no go, which I think a lot of us already knew the writing on the wall for that one.
That was a hell of a hit. It really was.
Yeah. It was a bad timing kind of bang, bang thing, but definitely got some helmet to helmet there. I can see why erring on the side of caution, you know, the rules are that way for a reason, but oof. I mean, so Mike, me and Tallman here, I am cautiously optimistic. It terrifies me, but I am optimistic. I think they have a chance. I want to say they have a chance. I'm hoping they win. I think they could win. There's a chance for me.
There's always a chance, gentlemen. There's always a chance. The tough part about it is I think Texas's run defense is top 15 in the nation. So, you know, your bell cow is going to have to really, really, you know, find some openings and get off those 40-yard scampers. But how realistic is it going to be? And then you're already missing Jordan Tyson in the wide receiver room as well. So I think it's still going to be a dogfight. But as far as with Tallman saying he's putting his money on it, yeah, I'll put my money on ASU to cover the spread. But I don't know about winning the game. It's going to be fun no matter what. New Year's Day game. I mean, when was the last time that anybody in Arizona had this big of a game in college football? It's been a number of decades, gentlemen. So this is something special, and I can't wait for the first, man.
It, you know what? Doesn't matter what the outcome is because the season was already a win. I mean, you already mentioned just the impact of recruiting. I mean, what the donors are going to throw into this program going from projected worst to being first and winning your first Big 12 title this being your first year in the Big 12. I mean, it's a total win. I mean, you're not going to see me upset or disappointed if this team comes out short on New Year's Day. Cause I mean, the impact and the success it's already there, and it's college football. It's a different beast. You know, it's already a win in my book. So either way it comes out, I mean, if we can pull it off, man, that would be one hell of a story. But I'm already high on ASU football. So either way, they're not going to ruin my new year.
Yeah, I agree, Tom. And that's a great perspective that I think any ASU fan needs to maintain, is that they, no matter what happens on New Year's Day, they can't take away our Big 12 championship. And to fight from worst to first and get that, it means everything. It's going to be, you know, we really can't emphasize how much that is going to mean to recruiting. And I have already heard stories of donors coming out and throwing millions of dollars or pledging millions of dollars just because of that Big 12 championship. And because they're so impressed that the direction that this administration, this team is headed, and under the leadership of Kenny Dillingham, him being so young, there's a lot of possibility for longevity. If they can give him the tools to succeed and he can have this be a premier football school once again, it's awesome. And it's an absolute win. I think Texas is going to be a tough battle. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be absolutely awesome if we can win that game. And then how crazy would it be if Oregon wins the Rose Bowl, ASU wins the Peach Bowl, and then two former Pac-12 teams are playing each other in the semifinal matchup? I think that would be absolutely crazy and so poetic in so many ways. But Mike, let's not put the cart in front of the horse now. Let's not do that. like Mike said, this could be our last stream. Maybe we'll get something out for you next week. You know, previewing this college football playoffs. But if not, definitely going to be back with you in the new year. Just some last notes. Mike had set up here for us. ASU men's swim and dive won first NCAA title in team history, breaking 9 school records and three NCAA records. That's pretty awesome. And Mike, it's Michael Phelps is the head coach of the swim and dive, right?
I don't know if he's the head coach, but I know he's been there for a number of years. I mean, so if you got the all-time Olympic gold medal winner, you know, heading a squad, yeah, you're going to be in good hands. But I had to throw that one in there, gentlemen, because if you really think about it, 75 minutes of kind of negativity, you got to throw some winners in there. So we were going to give some love to ASU men's swim and dive for sure.
And in an Olympic year, especially Summer Olympics, I feel like it's topical. It makes sense. In 2024, the NCAA men's Final Four hosted in Glendale at State Farm Stadium. That was obviously really awesome. 2024 WNBA All-Star Game was in Phoenix. It was the largest WNBA audience ever on ESPN networks with 3.4 million average viewers. Of course, the Caitlin Clark effect in full force with the Angel Reese drama sprinkled in there and all the other ladies who have started to make a name for themselves in that league. I think one of my favorite parts of that game was because they did the WNBA All-Stars versus Team USA because it was the Olympic year and the girls had to practice together. And it's a cool thing. I like that they do that. I thought it was really cool. And it was actually, it was crazy. Did the WNBA All-Stars win it?
They did.
They did. They beat the US Olympic team. And that was kind of a wake-up call. Diana Taurasi was pissed. Old lady Diana Taurasi. No disrespect, love you, Diana, but she was pissed, fired up. Like, we just let them beat them, but so that was great. But my favorite part that I was gonna mention is the connection that happened. Everyone was waiting for it. Caitlin Clark passed to Angel Reese for the layup. They dapped each other up. It was like, I thought that was a great moment, and it just showed that like these girls are just competitors. It's nothing personal. The internet drama is strictly on the internet. And I think at the end of the day, they both respect each other. And when they get on the court, they're just fierce competitors. And I appreciate that in a professional athlete. So yeah, WNBA trending upwards. That All-Star game was in Phoenix this last year. And then the Phoenix, the city, was named host city for the 2027 NBA All-Star game. This is the first time, I think, since, ooh, Mike, help me out here, 2016? When was the last time we had
this? I think it's 2009, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right.
I know it was 1995 was the – well, there might have been one before, I think in the 70s or 80s. But 1995, when they had the special – edition jerseys, which is what the Valley Suns jerseys are based off of this year, the signature jerseys, whatever they're called. So I mean, coming up on 20 years, it's a big, you know, shining light on Matt Ishbia and what he's been able to do for the Phoenix Suns organization as a whole. For him to come in this quickly and be able to, you know, shake Adam Silver's hand and basically say, hey, this is where, you know, basketball lives, man. Basketball is continuing to grow within the Valley. So we got to make sure to get the All-Star game here. So in just a short couple of years, it'll be here. But I think I wanted to put this list together because, gentlemen, if you truly think about it, our Big Four, we got two teams that sputter out and fail to make the playoffs in just heroic fashion, if you want to call it that. You got one team who is just trying to stay healthy and figure it out to make the playoffs. And then you literally have one team that's not here anymore. But the Valley continues to thrive when it comes to sports. The big sports are always coming here. And 2024 was, you know, no short of an example of that. So excited to see what comes next. Excited to see the next time that the Super Bowl comes here too. I know that's going to be probably a while, but it's always fun to have those big sporting events here in the Valley.
Yeah, and you know, we're right around the corner from the Waste Management Open, and it's a triumphant, sloppy return to Scottsdale. I know that's always a big one. Tallman and I talk about getting out to Turf Paradise up in North Phoenix, checking out some horse races.
Yeah.
Not any notable races that I know of taking place there, but nonetheless, sounds like an experience and something I feel like a degenerate gambler needs to go check out, you know, see what it's all about.
Oh, wait, talking about gambling, I have the last awesome note of 2024 as well. Okay. And this goes right into that. The Arizona Department of Gaming is breaking records. They stated that over $69.6 million in tax revenue has come from sports betting alone in its first 3 years in the Valley. And probably about 2% is directly from the pockets of our own VSP Tallman. So couldn't leave that one out for you guys.
Yeah, the state's welcome. You're welcome, guys.
I love it. You know, your donations to Uncle Sam are very much appreciated. Hopefully they can get a freeway out here to Santan Valley so my commute's a little bit easier.
Yeah, no shit.
But yeah, no, crazy year, guys. It's been a lot of fun. I know that our production has slowed down a little bit for a variety of reasons, but I am fully committed to returning in 2025 and getting back to business and doing it better than ever. Always a pleasure doing this with you two guys, but I want to give you each the floor to say any last words to the people in 2024.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure as always. It was a down year. Let's not sugarcoat it. It was a down year for the four major sports, but I wouldn't want to chat it up with anybody else. I appreciate you guys. Merry Christmas just happened. Happy New Year's coming up. Happy birthday to one VSP Tallman. Your boy is getting older, but hey, join the club, my brother. Appreciate you guys.
Oh, thanks, Mike. You know, some would say I'm past my prime, right? But I appreciate it. Likewise to you guys. I mean, it's been great. Wouldn't want to do this with anybody else. So thank you guys for having me. Man, like I said to start the stream, it's crazy that it's going to be 2025. So I'm going to have to spend the first month of the new year writing the wrong date because I'm still a child and can't remember the right shit. But hey, New Year's Eve's coming up. We got to be careful, guys. Okay. We can't celebrate too hard because we have an ASU game to watch at 11 a.m. the next day. So let's hope we behave and we the fuck am I saying? That's not gonna happen. But it's been great, guys. So
11 a.m.
11 a.m.
Why'd you have to remind me of that? All right.
I'm so sorry.
We'll be prepped. We'll be prepped and ready.
Yes, there you go.
I'll set my alarm now so I'm already prepared for it when the time comes.
But boom, done.
Man, yeah, again, just very excited. Glad to be doing this. Happy to have these guys doing it. Glad and thankful for all you subscribers. Anybody who's at the hour and 30 minute mark on one of our streams or recordings, you're a real one. You're a true fan. We appreciate you so very much. And we're going to keep bringing you content throughout the rest of the time that we continue to be alive and doing this. But guys, we'll keep you updated. I'm running out of words. I'm getting tired. But for Michael Benjamin and VSP Tallman, I'm Chris Patrick for the VSP family. Hope you have a happy new year and we'll see you in 2025. Peace.